by the order of Melchizedek. I really like this lesson. One of the favorite lessons I've put together. I guess I inherited this from my grandma. I like puzzles. I love to figure out puzzles. I have them on my phone, and I waste a good part of my day doing stuff like this. That's called Sudoku. I like that one. I like stuff that involves numbers more than letters for whatever reason. I have trouble moving letters around in my head, but numbers I'm pretty good at. I can do a Sudoku pretty quickly. Now this picture right here, this is something that Megan and I, that we've really gotten into. They're called escape rooms. I don't know if you've ever done an escape room. There's one here in town. It's really good. The concept is you just kind of are put into a room, and it's usually got a theme, or maybe you're in the Wild Wild West, or maybe you're in the bunker of a mad scientist or something, and you just have to figure out how to get out of the room, and you just have to find clues. And maybe the way things are arranged on the wall might be a clue. Maybe the way the rug is turned on the floor, that's a clue. And so anytime we go on vacation, we always try to find an escape room, because they're a lot of fun to do. I love trying to find clues and figure out just little outside-the-box thinking. I like it. I think it's fun. And here's kind of a real-life example of this. John Roberts, probably the only person in this room that knows who the KGC is besides me. Back in the American Civil War, the Confederates were really, really good at stealing gold from the Union. But they didn't really have a place to put it. So they started hiding gold all over the place. And there was an organization that it grew out of this time period. They were called the KGC, the Knights of the Golden Circle. And most of them were Freemasons. And so if you notice kind of on this picture, there's some Masonry symbols on there. And so what they would do is they would hide this gold, and the KGC was kind of in control of protecting the gold. And so all over the place, they've left clues. Right out in the middle of open, maybe on a statue the Freemasons are working on, they put a little symbol that nobody knew it except the people of the KGC, that it was actually a clue leading to where the treasure was hidden. True story. And I was watching a guy on the History Channel not too long ago. This fella figured it out, or at least part of the code, and he was able to find a lot of caches of old Union gold. He was making thousands and thousands of dollars by discovering this old hidden treasure. And these little symbols were carved into buildings. They were carved into trees. They were carved onto headstones, all sorts of crazy ways. But there were clues that were hidden right there in blind sight for anybody to see if they only knew what they were looking for. So I love stuff like that. I love espionage and the idea of hiding in plain sight and things like that. I think that is fascinating. Well, this morning, that's kind of what we're going to talk about. There is a clue given in the Bible. And this is a fascinating story. And hopefully by the time we get to the end, I can explain what makes it so fascinating. It's this man by the name of Melchizedek. Melchizedek is only mentioned three times in the Bible, or three locations. Genesis chapter 14, Psalm 110, and then in our section where we're studying Hebrews right now, it actually covers chapters 5, 6, and 7. And that's the only time you're ever going to hear about this man, Melchizedek. Normally when you study about Melchizedek, or you read, or you Google it, the word mysterious is somehow going to be worked into that explanation. There's this mysterious man, Melchizedek, because there's not a lot of information. It's just kind of a quick little blurb of a story, and we're just left to try to figure out the clue. I think there's a problem. Being that these are the only biblical references to Melchizedek, I think people are getting too caught up in who is the man Melchizedek. Who is this man? But what we ought to be worried about is the bigger picture, and that is the order of Melchizedek. And that's what I want to try to talk to you this morning about. That's going to be our focus. Not so much upon who is Melchizedek, but the order of Melchizedek. And that's something that's extremely important. So let's go back to Genesis. This is where it all starts. I kind of condensed these verses down. It's found in Genesis 14 if you want to read the entire account. But here's the gist of it. There were a bunch of kings that got together. They were led by this man right now. I can't pronounce his name, so I'm going to shorten it to Shed. Shed got a bunch of kings together. In fact, he got three other kings together. So we had a group of four kings made an alliance. And they attacked the neighboring areas around them. They attacked Sodom, Gomorrah. They attacked Zeboah, Bela, and the others. It was five of them. They attacked five different kings. And so Shed and his boys routed the five kings. In fact, it says the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. They took off running. And so then Shed and his alliance went into Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around, and they just started taking plunder and spoil of war. They took people. They took food. They took supplies. Whatever they wanted, they just loaded up and they took it. Well, they also took Lot. Remember, Lot was Abraham's nephew who happened to be living in Sodom at the time. So they came in and they took Lot and Lot's family and Lot's money and Lot's animals and Lot's supplies. They took it with them as plunders and spoil of war. Well, Abram heard about this. And notice it says Abram. He's going to have his name changed to Abraham. But at this point in time, technically, he is still known as Abram. Well, Abram heard about it, how his nephew Lot had been taken by Shed and his alliance. And it says, now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit. Verse 16 says, so he brought back all the goods and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. So Abram heard about this. So he went and he attacked with his 318 and got Lot back and his family and his supplies and his animals and his money. And he returned with Lot as this victorious captain of this army. And this is where we meet Melchizedek. So as he's returning back home, Abram with all of this 318 army and Lot and all these folks with him, it says in verse 18 of Genesis 14, then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. And he was the priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And he gave him a tithe of all. And that's it. That's all we know about Melchizedek. That's it. It is just like this little bitty story interspersed into the account of Genesis of how Abraham protected Lot. We get this little blurb about this man by the name of Melchizedek. So I underlined a couple words for it. First, it says Melchizedek was king and priest. That's important. That is very important. The fact that Melchizedek was king of Salem. Follow us. Let's think about this now. Salem was a city, was a location. It was eventually overtaken by a group called the Jebusites. J-E-B-U. And then they put Salem with it. J-E-B-U-S-A-L-E-M. And then somehow over the years that B got turned into an R. And that's Jerusalem. Okay, so that's where he's from. Melchizedek is king of Salem, which would eventually be known as Jerusalem. But he's also the priest. Now, in the Jewish way of thinking, that wasn't possible, right? You didn't have a king and a priest. In fact, remember, that's what got Saul, the king, in trouble. Remember, King Saul one time was told to wait on Samuel the priest. And Samuel the priest was supposed to come offer some sacrifices. And he's running a little late, and Saul kept checking his watch, and still nothing. And eventually Saul lost patience, and he went in and gave the sacrifices. The king tried to be the priest, and that's where all of Saul's problems started with, was when he crossed the priesthood and the kingship. Couldn't do that under the law of Moses. Well, Melchizedek was both the king and he was a priest. That's important. Remember that. It also says he's the priest of God Most High. Not some Canaanite king. Not some god of Canaan. Not some god of the land. No, it's the same God Most High that Abraham worshipped. That's important. Where did Melchizedek come from? I don't know. Where did Melchizedek go? I don't know. But what I do know is that he was a king and he was a priest. Now we get down here to the bottom, it says, and he gave him a tithe. It's kind of hard to figure out this pronoun, he. Hebrews explains it, so we'll get there then, but I'm telling you that he is in reference to Abraham. Abraham gave a tithe to Melchizedek. So in other words, Abraham realized that he was the lesser, and he gave a tithe to Melchizedek that he recognized as being greater. So Melchizedek is greater than Abraham. Now this is where people start usually getting a little bit confused. Who was Melchizedek? Who was he? Who was this mysterious man that just showed up on the scene there as Abraham was going home one day? Was he a theophany of Jesus? There's a fancy word for it. Theophany, what that means is, that is like a representation of Jesus appearing in the Old Testament. And that is a fancy word. It's called theophany. It's where God appeared as a man before the time of Christ. Let me give you the best example I can think of. Drew talked about this not too long ago. Remember in the book of Daniel? There was three friends of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they got crosswise with Nebuchadnezzar, so he threw them in the fiery furnace. And it says he torched that furnace up hotter than it had ever been, seven times hotter than it had ever been before. And Nebuchadnezzar looked down, and he said, wait a minute, didn't we just throw in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? He says, I see four. There's four people in the furnace. And he says that fourth one has the appearance of the Son of God. Who was that fourth person? I don't know. Was that an angel? Was that God in person? Was that a pre-incarnate form of Jesus? I don't know. But that's what a theophany is. And some people think, well, Melchizedek was a theophany of Jesus. That was like a pre-incarnate representation of Jesus. And maybe that's what he was. I don't know. Some people think it was Shem. In fact, this is what the rabbis taught. The rabbis, the Jewish rabbis, taught that it was Shem, the son of Noah, that he was Melchizedek. Or maybe it was at least one of Shem's descendants. That, remember you have Abraham? Abraham actually descended from Shem. And so they think, well, maybe that was Shem. And he was kind of the first high priest. I don't know. And some people think he was just simply Melchizedek. He was just simply a man. That he was just a king, just as it says. All I know is, and I'll put this up again, I think people today are too concerned with the man Melchizedek and miss the bigger picture of the order of Melchizedek. And that's what I'm going to try to look at this morning. But first of all, he was a king and a priest. King and a priest was the underlying factor of being of the order of Melchizedek. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was the priest of God Most High. So keep that in mind. The order of Melchizedek was both a king and a priest. Now we get a lot of water under the bridge before we start talking about the priesthood of Israel. I want you to understand this. Abraham still has to have his name changed to Abraham. Abraham then has to beget Isaac. Isaac then has to beget Jacob. Jacob then has to beget 12 sons. They then have to journey into Egypt during the time of the Great Famine. Then they have to spend 400 years of slavery in Egypt until a man by the name of Moses appears, who leads Moses and his brother Aaron lead them on the Exodus out of Egypt. The law is then delivered at Mount Sinai. And for the first time now, we have the establishment of the Aaronic priesthood. Or sometimes you'll see this called Levitical priesthood. The establishment of the priesthood through the tribe of Levi. We got a lot of water under the bridge. In fact, it's about 600 years, as best I can tell, from the time when Melchizedek meets Abram until the establishment of the Jewish or the Levitical or the Mosaical priesthood. About 600 years. So remember that from number two. That the order of Melchizedek predated the order of Aaron by over 600 years. And that's important. That this order of Melchizedek, this priesthood of Melchizedek already existed before we even had Levites and Aaron and Aaron's sons. Order of Melchizedek already existed. I'm going to put some dates up here for you. I don't know how close these are. These are just some approximations. About 2084 B.C. would have been about the time Melchizedek met Abram. About 1446 was when the law of Moses was established. So it's about a 600-year period that Melchizedek predated the Levitical priesthood. And about 400 years later, there was a king. His name was King David. And King David happened to write a song. Just out of the blue. It's fascinating to me. So this clue is given in the book of Genesis. The scriptures are then silent about it for about 1,000 years. There is not a reference one in the book of in the Bible to Melchizedek after this Genesis chapter 14. I found a little bit in a book. It's called Jazer. It is an apocryphal book. A little bit by the rabbis, not much. It was kind of just a clue that was completely glossed over. Nobody picked up on it. About 1,000 years later, David, out of the blue, writes a song. And you know what he did? He referenced Melchizedek. 1,000 years later. This is Psalm 110. Here's our second reference to Melchizedek. Psalm 110. The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand, till I make your enemies your footstool. The Lord shall send the rod of your strength out of Zion, rule in the midst of your enemies. Your people shall be volunteers in the day of your power. In the beauties of holiness, from the womb of the morning, you have the dew of your youth. The Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. 1,000 years after Melchizedek, nobody said a word about it. During all the time in the wilderness wanderings, there's no Melchizedek. During the time of the judges, no Melchizedek. And now we get to David writing this song, and out of nowhere, he pulls out something from way, way back about Melchizedek. This is what fascinates me. Can you imagine sitting there, and I don't know how this works. I don't know how they sang these songs. I don't know. I don't know if it had a melody to it. I don't know if it was kind of a chant or if it was just poetry. But my mind's kind of crazy. I'm just imagining being out around the tabernacle one day. And I know they didn't have DJs or anything. They didn't have radio stations. But I can almost imagine in my head, in kind of a Casey Kasem kind of voice, here's the latest song by David. And they start singing this song. Now remember, they didn't name their songs by numbers. They named them by the first line of the song. So I'm assuming that this song was probably called Sit at My Right Hand. So can't you just imagine someone saying, here's a new song by David, Sit at My Right Hand, and here come the tabernacle singers. And they start singing this song. And I suppose, like anybody else, they're trying to understand the lyrics. They're trying to figure out what the lyrics are saying. And then all of a sudden it gets to the end and it says, you're a priest forever by the order of Melchizedek. And I can just imagine the entire crowd going, huh? Melchizedek? Who's Melchizedek? It's been 1,000 years and no one's spoken the name Melchizedek. What is David talking about? Y'all young folks now, if you want to know the lyrics of a song, you Google it. I'm a little bit older. I had cassette tapes. And in the old cassette tapes, a lot of time, you could unfold it, and it would have the lyrics written. Some of y'all are a little bit older, you had vinyl records, right? And sometimes the lyrics were written on that outside cover of the album. If not, you just had to figure out the lyrics on your own. I remember one time, I liked this song. I had it on a cassette tape. And I said, I'm going to figure out the lyrics to this song. So you would, you know, play, pause, rewind, play. You just try to write it down. If you're born in the 60s, you'll probably appreciate this, or a child of the 60s. There was a song called Louie Louie, except they pronounced it Louie Louie. Oh no, saying we got to go now. And I tried to figure out the words to that song, and I will tell you, I have no idea what the words of Louie Louie are. You can't understand a word that guy's saying. You probably don't want to understand what Louie Louie's about, if I'm guessing right. But that's how you would understand the lyrics. So I'm trying to figure out now, they've heard this song here from Psalm 110, Sit at My Right Hand. And they're trying to figure out Melchizedek. Who is Melchizedek? And I bet there was a rush to go find the scribes, to go find the people that knew the word and said, hey, who is Melchizedek? What does this even mean? I got busy last night. I don't know why I did this. Remember the Jews, the children of Israel, the first 5 books of the Bible. That was theirs. That was the Torah. And I know they wasn't written in chapter and verse, but I figure this is pretty close. I went in and I counted all the verses. How many verses are there in the first 5 books of the Bible? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers. How many of them are there? There's 5,630 verses. Don't quote me on that. I wasn't really checking very closely on my math, but it's somewhere in that ballpark. Out of those 5,630 verses, three of them talk about Melchizedek. That's it. And so I figured it out mathematically. That is 1/20 of 1%. It's 0.053%. So in other words, you could be 99.95% scholar on the five books of the Bible and still not know who Melchizedek is. It just wasn't that... It was just this random story about this random king, and it didn't make any sense. And here comes David singing a song and mentions Melchizedek. Isn't that crazy? Keep going. So this Psalm 10, 110, the Lord, and I put this in, this word Lord right here is Jehovah, or Yahweh. He says, the Lord said to my Lord, that's another word. Okay, it's another word, Adonijah. When he says, sit at my right hand, who is this Lord? Who does that second Lord refer to? Well, that was a big question. Does that Lord refer to one of David's men? Does it refer to an angel? Well, I'll tell you who that Lord refers to, because we have the best commentator in the world on that situation, Jesus Christ himself. In Matthew, the 22nd chapter, oh, by the way, we've jumped up now about another 1,000 years. Nothing else has been said about Melchizedek since then, about as far as I can tell. About 1,000 years later, while the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them, saying, what do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he? And they said to him, the son of David. And he said to them, how then does David in the Spirit call him Lord, saying, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool? If David then calls him Lord, how is he his son? It says, and no one was able to answer him a word, nor from that day on did anyone dare question him anymore. So what does Jesus do? He goes back and he pulls this obscure psalm that David wrote that was based upon an obscure reference in the book of Genesis. And he puts it all together and he says this, my Lord, he said that's talking about the Christ. And he makes a clear connection that he was this Lord that David was referring to. So the plot thickens a little bit. Let me add some to our timeline now. So it's about 1,000 years between Melchizedek actually meeting Abram until the time that David became king. It's about another 1,000 years that Jesus quoted Psalm 10 as being a messianic psalm, and that he was the Lord that was in reference. And now we're going to go about 36 years later to the writing of the book of Hebrews. And this is where we're going to tie everything together. Nobody knows who Melchizedek is. Nobody seems to understand the significance of the order of Melchizedek until the book of Hebrews. So here we go. Hebrews chapter 5. Verse 6, it says, as he also says in another place, you are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and was heard because of his godly fear, though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him, called by God as high priest according to the order of Melchizedek, of whom we have much to say and hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. Who's he talking about? Who's going to be the priest of this order of Melchizedek? He's obviously talking about Jesus, the Son of God. And he says, listen, it's hard. It's hard to explain, but I want you to notice it's of the order of Melchizedek. It's not the order of Aaron. He is of the order of Melchizedek. So I said earlier, don't get caught up in the man Melchizedek. What's important is it's the order of Melchizedek. It's another division of high priesthood. Okay? It's not the Levitical. It's not through the lineage of Aaron. It's not through the lineage of the Levites. That's not what he's talking about. He says Jesus is different. He is of the order of Melchizedek. So what does that mean? Well, we jump to Hebrews chapter 6. He says, I'm going to explain more about it. He does. It's chapter 6 and chapter 7. Hebrews 6:19. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, which enters the presence behind the veil, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. So now we see that Jesus the Christ has become the high priest of the order of Melchizedek. Not the order of Aaron, not the order of the Levites, but the order of Melchizedek. It's a little bit different. And then we get to Hebrews chapter 7, and really this whole chapter explains about Melchizedek. So I'll pick up a couple of verses. Hebrews 7:1, for this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being translated king of righteousness, and then also king of Salem, meaning king of peace, without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like the Son of God, remains a priest continually. Wow. Those three verses right there, you could spend a lifetime probably trying to understand. Here's this concept of the king and the priest again. We've already talked about that. Now we see that it means king of righteousness, king of peace. Those are also names that are associated with Jesus. Wow. It says he's without father, without mother, without genealogy. You've got to remember, the Levitical priesthood, or the priesthood of Aaron, was totally based on genealogy. It had to be from a certain tribe. Not anyone could be a high priest. You had to be of the tribe of Levites. Wow, that's beautiful. Having neither beginning of days nor end of life. I don't know if that officially means that Melchizedek was there from the beginning and remains. I don't know if that's just kind of a symbolic way of just saying we don't know anything about Melchizedek. He just shows up. He was there before and he's there after. I don't know. But it also says he was made like the Son of God. See, that's that theophany idea again, that he was made like the Son of God. But notice this last phrase. He remains a priest continually. And that's the part we've got to understand. Don't get caught up in Melchizedek the man. Who is he? It's the order of Melchizedek, and it was a continual priesthood. See, the Aaronic or the Levitical priesthood was not such. You know what stopped a man from being a priest? He died. And when the high priest died, they got another high priest. The order of Melchizedek was not like that. It was something that glossed over death. Death did not affect the order of Melchizedek. And so when Jesus becomes the high priest, yeah, we don't have to worry about death anymore, because he's of the order of Melchizedek, not the order of Aaron. Okay? Writer Hebrews tries to explain this. Hebrews 7:11. Therefore, if perfection were through the Levitical, and I just put kind of in parentheses here, Aaronic, meaning he's of the lineage of Aaron. He's a Levite priest. If perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should arise according to the order of Melchizedek and not be called according to the order of Aaron? They said if the Levitical priesthood at the order of Aaron was sufficient, then why would we need this order of Melchizedek? Hebrews 7:13. This is the stumbling block that the Jews had in their mind. They just couldn't get over this. For he of whom these things are spoken belongs to another tribe, from which no man has officiated at the altar. For it is evident that our Lord arose from Judah, of which tribe Moses spoke nothing concerning the priesthood. That's what the Jews couldn't get over. Because they kept hearing about this priest. Jesus is going to be the high priest. Then if that was the case, in their way of thinking, he had to have been of the tribe of Levi. He had to be a Levite priest. And everybody and their dog knew that Jesus was from the tribe of Judah. They said, well, there's no way he can't have it. He can't be from the tribe of Judah and be a priest. That's partially correct. Yeah, if you were one of those Facebook fact checkers, that would say that statement is partially correct. Because that is true. He could not be from the tribe of Judah and be a Levite priest. But you know what he could be? He could be the priest after the order of Melchizedek. And that clue was put forth in the scriptures from long ago. So a major stumbling block has now been explained. How could Jesus of the tribe of Judah become the high priest of the nation of Israel? Well, it's because he was of the order of Melchizedek. Hebrews 7 and 15, as we draw close. And it is yet far more evident if in the likeness of Melchizedek there rises another priest who has come not according to the law of a fleshly commandment, but according to the power of an endless life. For he testifies, you are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. See, it was a continual priesthood. It wasn't the same priesthood. And that's what the Jews were so confused about. So now we have four things. Order of Melchizedek was a king and a priest, unlike the order of Aaron. It predated the order of Aaron by over 600 years. It was a continual priesthood. And once and for all, it solved the Judah versus Levi tribe issue that the Jews had so much problem understanding when they spoke about Jesus. Hebrews 7 and 21 through 24. The Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. By so much more, Jesus has become a surety of a better covenant. Also, there were many priests, because they are prevented by death from continuing. But he, because he continues forever, has an unchangeable priesthood. And the whole time, that lesson was right in front of us. Now, it was put in three verses, way back in the book of Genesis. And nobody knew what it meant. Nobody could understand it. David, writing in the Spirit 1,000 years later, figured it out. And then now the writer of Hebrews, 1,000 years after that, has to explain it to us. That's one of the greatest clues ever. Greatest escape room clues you could ever imagine. Because, you know how impressive it is? There's a mind-blowing clue that took over 2,100 years to fully explain this concept of this prophet-priest role of the Messiah. But it was there the whole time. It was there in the scriptures the whole time where anyone could have read it if we'd only just been able to figure it out. It was hiding in plain sight. And that just fascinates me. Is there any doubt that God has an eternal plan for salvation? He was able, I want you to think about this as we close down. God had already solved a problem some 600 years before the problem even existed. Think about that. God knew there was going to be a question about this Levitical priesthood. So 600 years before the Levitical priesthood even began, we had the order of Melchizedek that solved the problem once and for all. And some people think that this is all a mistake, that God just made this stuff up along the way. Not a chance. And there was a clue that was given from the very beginning. You know, I've tried to think of an analogy to explain this, to think about how awesome this is. I mean, this is the best I could come up with. I apologize. That's Brownie. That was my Dodge pickup truck. If you like Dodge pickup trucks, I'm sorry. Because me and Brownie did not get along very well. I think it was a 2001 Dodge pickup truck. I liked driving it, but it did have an interesting thing about it. It liked to just die as you were driving. No rhyme or reason to it. It had a computer wiring issue that you'd just be driving along and it would die. And you'd get real good at slamming it into neutral and restarting it on the fly and it would start. And sometimes it would do it when you're all by yourself. Other times it would do it right as you're flying across an intersection. And I said, you know what? It's time to get rid of Brownie. I took it to the dealership. They couldn't fix it. I took it to different mechanics. They couldn't fix it. And come to find out, a little research, they said that Dodge apparently had a wiring electrical computer type issue that was pretty common during those times. I said, you know what? I'm getting rid of Brownie. Had enough of Brownie. There was one person that was not real happy about Brownie leaving. You might see her laying up on the top. You may not have noticed. That's Aaron up at the top. Aaron loved Brownie. She didn't want me to get rid of it. But I decided, you know what? I've had enough of this car doing this. I want you to imagine this. Can you imagine if I was to go back and do a little research and come to find out that 600 years before that Dodge pickup truck was built, 600 years, a guy by the name of Leonardo da Vinci had invented a part that would fix the computer issue in my 2001 Dodge pickup truck. Could you imagine that? That 600 years before this invention even came to life, that Leonardo da Vinci had already fixed the problem that this truck was going to have. And sure, there's this little piece that Leonardo da Vinci back in the 1400s invented, and I could just go in and fix my truck. I mean, that doesn't even make sense, does it? That's just ridiculous. But that's what God did. There was a problem about the Levitical priesthood. There was a problem about the priesthood and the kingship that the Jews were going to have issues with. So 600 years before the law of Moses was even established, God had already provided the fix. He had already provided the way to fix the problem. And that's the best example I can give you. That's the best clue that's ever been given in the world. Right there in the book of Genesis chapter 14 that no one understood for about 2,100 years. And now we're 4,000 years past and we still don't understand much about Melchizedek. So I don't know how much we've gone, but maybe after today we at least have some understanding about this great story.